Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Liverpool exit Champions League. Gerrard already got out of jail once this year when things didn't go as requested. Twice, perhaps, too much to ask. Meantime, on-field disasters and no new stadium ahead of the Merseyside derby. Looks like Everton are finally keeping up with the neighbours. Abroad, there's build-up to Barca-Real and the fallout from Barcelona-Inter as that Mourinho gets a right old spanking. There's all the rest of the midweek news, your posts, a look at the weekend's games and Pompey's decision to fire Paul Hart, not so much flying in the face of reason as building an airstrip on it and staging formation acrobatic displays. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Yes, yes, yes. And a special pod lineup today for what is a special pod, we hope. We have Barry Glendenning.
Hi, James.
Hi, Barry. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Man who likes his coefficient chips.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
So. Yeah. And Sean Ingle. How are you, Sean?
A bit tired, Jimbo, to be honest. My daughter's kept me awake for the last 5 nights with a cough that's more hacking than a 17-year-old cyber nerd, and I'm starting to feel it a bit.
More hacking than a Turkish centre-forward, huh?
Possibly. Yep. More hacking than Billy Jones in his prime.
Yeah. I thought Sean, he was going to tell you that he was at the Student Media Awards last night and he met Colin Murray, because that's what he'd been telling everyone else today.
Right. How did that go?
It was very reserved, very quiet, very meditative. Hmm. It was students getting hammered out of their heads and lots of cheering and riotous celebrations.
You fitted right
I
in,
did. I presented
think,
an award.
Yeah. Did you?
Yes.
Oh, no. So they must have been quite excited by that, Sean, were they?
I think no one knew who I was.
Really?
Were you the only non-famous person there?
Probably.
Right. Well, you and Colin Murray.
Now then, let's just move on. Adopt somber tone. Liverpool are out of the Champions League. So far, planet still seems to be revolving, but for how much longer? That's the question. Raphael Honigstein.
Yes. Well, I think I've said before, and I don't mind repeating myself, that the real issue for them is next year's Champions League, because that's where the real money is. One or two more games wouldn't have made a difference. As Benitez has been saying for a month or so now, they don't budget for getting into the last 16, but they do budget for Champions League money next year. And as we know, the owners are desperately trying to offload the club, huge debts, and a club who's not in the Champions League but paying Champions League money to his players will be a very difficult proposition. As Newcastle have found and Leeds before them, etc. So it could all go very wrong.
Mm. Sean, it's the first time a British team has not qualified from the Champions League group stage since 2005. I think that must be an English team, not British team, actually. Does this mean English dominance of the tournament is over?
I think it's too early to say that, because the other three sides have cantered into the last 16. It does show, though, that Liverpool are struggling hugely. There weren't many positives from Wednesday's games. They were quite lethargic. David Shen had conceded 13 goals in the last three games. And apart from David Ongogo, I thought, you know, was pretty decent. Liverpool, you know, didn't really do very much.
Hmm. Barry, this is all, I suppose, not really new news. It's just a logical consequence of stuff that happened before. But let me ask you, will Liverpool take the Europa League seriously, in your opinion?
I presume they will. It's a very important competition. Well, that's certainly the impression you would get from listening to their players, some of whom seem very excited about the prospect of winning the Europa League. I don't think they will win it. It's been interesting to look just on assorted forums and on our own sport blog. It's quite amusing just sitting back and watching as the Liverpool fans all seem to have split into two factions. On the one hand, you've those who are blindly loyal to Rafa Benitez, who would, you know, hop on one foot and drink raspberry juice out of an elephant's tusk if he asked them to. The others, who I suspect are older fans, who are aware of the days back when Liverpool used to win the league on a regular basis, who have become increasingly disillusioned with them. And obviously we're given their demise from the Champions League a lot of coverage on the sport blog and in the paper, and we're getting heavily criticised for this by Liverpool fans who think we're dancing on their graves. But I don't, you know, if we didn't cover it at all, that would be, you know, an extraordinary thing.
Yeah.
And
Barry,
if
that big book in front of that leather-bound anti-Liverpool agenda that you have?
Oh, there? Yeah, well, sorry, it's my
car-carrying member.
It's my turn to carry it around today, and then I just pass it on to the next journalist, because we're all anti-RAF. We all have a London-based anti-Liverpool agenda. It's well documented.
If you had to pick one political figure, Sean, to compare Rafa Benitez to, who would it be and why?
Well, put me on the spot, why don't you? But I guess there are similarities between us.
Listeners, I haven't put Sean on any spot at all.
Just leave the original.
Sean wants to come in with a Gordon Brown is Rafa Benitez angle. Typical Guardianista that you are. Come on.
We knew Benitez's personality. Yeah. We've known that. And Gordon Brown has been the Chancellor since 1997 and Prime Minister for a year or two. Everyone knew what he was like.
Right.
So we shouldn't. Labour Party shouldn't complain about Gordon Brown because they knew what he was like before he took the job.
Right.
Similarly, Liverpool fans shouldn't complain about Benitez because they knew when he signed this new 5-year contract that they knew what he was like.
Oh, right. Okay. Interesting. Oh, okay. Well done, Fiorentina, in the meantime, whose victory over Lyon, a little bit desperate at the end, some fine goalkeeping from Sebastian Frey, is what did for Liverpool and what put Fiorentina through to the knockout stages for the first time in 10 years. During which, as I was saying on Monday, during which 10 years, so much has happened. They went bankrupt in 2002, thanks to their owner's habit of funneling funds out of the club to pay off his other debts. Why does that sound familiar? Anyway, next up for Liverpool, it's the Merseyside derby with Everton, who have won just one of their last 10 games.
I should point out at the moment, Barry is dancing, I think.
It's that bass, isn't it?
Sticking his fingers in my face.
V's, Sean's way.
Yes. They are just 4 points off the drop after this midweek's 3-2 defeat to Hull City.
Well, I've taken money off Barry the last 2 years, and I'm still fairly confident. Everton have got a huge injury list, and you would imagine that when they get the likes of Arteta back.
Jagielka.
Yeah.
And Ichibi, James Vaughan, Phil Neville.
Well, Phil Neville's a huge
in the
loss.
Same way as when Liverpool get Aquilani fit, I fully expect them to win the Champions League and the Premier League.
Right. Yes. Anyway, Liverpool haven't been doing too well themselves, only one win in seven. But if there was a time to face neighbours Everton, it has to be now.
I think it's a good fixture for them. I mean, Everton are very, very poor. I think, as I said, I think back in August, I think they're a team who look at the beginning of the season think first we have to avoid relegation along with 10 other teams, and then they can look forwards, and they're right in it now. And of course they're going to raise their game. It's a little bit different than a Hull game if they play Liverpool, but Liverpool still have a lot of good players and easily enough to beat Everton.
Now, the Merseyside derby coming up Sunday afternoon. Also Sunday afternoon, Arsenal and Chelsea facing each other at the Emirates. Both of them won midweek in the Champions League. Arsenal, though, came out of their game with Standard Liège, the attractively attired Standard Liège, very badly hit by injuries, particularly Kieran Gibbs, who was left with a big hole in his foot, according to Arsene Wenger, at the end of that game. They have both the first and second choice left-backs out, Robin van Persie out, doubts over William Gallas.
Could I just say, blow a solo on my own trumpet, if that's not too disturbing an image for the listeners. I actually diagnosed Kieran Gibbs' broken metatarsal on my minute report before he even went for an X-ray.
And how did you do that, Barry?
Because I just saw the manner of the foul, the way he was limping afterwards. It screamed broken metatarsal.
Is it not true to say that any kind of bone injury in the foot is these days some sort of metatarsal?
Well, no, it could be a toe.
Wait, aren't those metatarsals as well?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I just know it's always a metatarsal thing.
Yeah, it could have just been bruised, but I said, no, that's worse than a bruise. That's a broken metatarsal.
Dr. Barry.
Yep.
You talk about Chelsea rightly being favourites for this game and Arsenal having all sorts of worries. Mm. I guess Arsenal will look at the record. They've got a fantastic home record to Chelsea in the Premier League era. Of the 17 matches they've played, they've won 10 and they've drawn 5, although 8 of their 10 wins have been by a single goal. Mm. So they have that, but the way Chelsea are playing at the moment, and Terry after last night's game was saying that we're back to playing like we did in the Mourinho era, we're grinding out results. Arsenal look very fragile at the moment, and you can see Chelsea going there, and if Gallas doesn't play, Drogba could make hay against Senderos. We've all seen that before.
Well, as you say, fragile and shaky, and the conventional wisdom about Arsenal is that their squad is really too short to challenge, so this would be a great opportunity to dispel that myth. Chelsea not unbeatable as well. They've lost two of their last three games away. Did you know, Raphael Honigstein?
Yeah, and it's the first, with the exception perhaps of the Villa away game, it's the first serious away game they're facing. I think, you know, you look at the teams that they've played, and they played all the better teams at home, apart from Villa. They've had a very, very easy start. I think Burnley, Sunderland, Hull, Fulham were the first four games. So perhaps the table is a little bit skewed. Unfortunately, I think that Arsenal just have lost too many players. I wouldn't be so concerned with the defensive situation, but Van Persie is just such a big, big player for them this year. He makes all the difference, and even against lesser sides, as you saw against Sunderland, he is very, very much missed. He holds everything together. He's the focal point for every attack. And without him, I think we've been bereaved of a bigger spectacle, and I think it could be one very one-sided.
Mm. Arsenal had won all their home games so far this season, averaging four goals a match. But those days, suggests Raphael Honigstein, are over. Elsewhere in the Champions League, from an English point of view, Man United lost at home. They must be bashik to their stomachs. but, you know, they're already qualified and that. And they, of course, are facing Portsmouth at Fratton Park. We'll have more on that and the managerial storm surrounding the South Coast club later on in the pod. That, though, is it for part one. Next up, also on a Champions League note, we'll be discussing one of the big midweek games, Barcelona's humiliation of Jose Mourinho's Inter.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Hola, Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Hello, James, in near-Earth orbit.
Exactly. Welcome to you.
Which is just outside King's Cross, I hear.
Yes, King's Cross near-Earth for all your near-Earth orbit and knocking shop needs.
Indeed so. Now, Tuesday night, Italian top dogs Inter faced the European champions and dealt with all the pressure with the same kind of assured confidence that rabbits deal with headlights, really. They were magnificent. Barcelona, of course, while Inter stood stock still and watched. Inter looked like a team that had already qualified. Sid Lowe, what did the Spanish make of it all?
Well, Inter look like a team that are already qualified would, I suppose, be the positive way of looking at it. Look at Inter and say, oh, well, they think it's done, although it's not entirely done. And that's why they play like that. The Spanish looking at it the other way around, of course. They're looking at it from two sides, which is inevitable. The first one, that Barcelona were extremely good, very, very good indeed, in particular without Leo Messi and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And they went into the game with lots of people saying, crikey, this could be the end. You know, they could be out of Europe. And it really did look like that. But they were superb, in particular Xavi Hernandez and Andres Iniesta, the two players who performed so well against Manchester United in the Champions League final. But then the other side of that coin is they've looked at Inter Milan, most of the Spanish media, and gone, bloody hell, they're terrible.
Oh, they were absolutely rubbish. Sid, and even Mourinho's not been able to come up with any kind of excuse.
Yeah, it was interesting sitting in the press conference after the game and listening to Mourinho and talking to Mourinho as well. I asked him a couple of questions and a colleague of mine did. And he, first of all, was interesting. He insisted on speaking Italian, even though he speaks perfect Spanish and not bad Catalan in front of all the media, apart from when he was asked in English, and then he responded in English. But he pointed out a series of factors, which obviously are mitigating factors to some extent. The absence of Schneider was one. The fact that Barcelona played very well was the other. And he didn't. I was quite impressed with him in that he didn't try and make excuses. He didn't try and complain. And there was one brilliant moment when he was asked, were there any positives? And he sat there and said, positives. Then he said, well, a lot of teams psychologically at halftime, having been absolutely destroyed the way we were, would have collapsed to three or four. At least we didn't do that, which is, I think, cold comfort, really.
Jimbo, did you see the story in Sky Italia this morning? The Inter players arriving for the training session were left stunned as a fan tried to gallop through the club's Appiano Gentile training ground on horseback. apparently, the morning report showed a lady on a horse outside the training centre trying to gain entry by the main entrance before security personnel tried to stop her. Is this common?
No, but it's not the first time that Inter have had a mare midweek, that's for sure. But
it wasn't Ruud van Nistelrooy looking for a new club?
He's going to Liverpool, isn't he?
Apparently so.
Just two sub-appearances all this season for Ruud van Nistelrooy.
How's the build-up to El Clasico going? Are there players dressed in silly outfits, as is usually the case?
Because Barcelona are taking on Real Madrid Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, there haven't been any silly outages yet, but they do this brilliant thing. One of the things that Mark do in particular is they do like predictions from famous people. But they've been doing this for the best part of 10 days now. And, of course, these people are getting increasingly unfamous. The other day, the prediction on Real Madrid's Barcelona's game came from the guy who, the maitre d' in a restaurant in Madrid. I thought, whoa, that is famous. It's building up, but of course it's all really focused, certainly in Madrid at least, on one man, and that's Cristiano Ronaldo. It's all been about him. In fact, it feels like the entire season has been about Cristiano Ronaldo. When he was here and playing, and he was playing very well, he scored 9 goals in his first, I think it must have been 8 competitive games for Real Madrid, and Marca was bigging him up. Of course, then getting injured in Madrid's results and performances not being particularly good, that helped them big him up even more. Now coming back from injury, he's been hailed today on the front pages of both of the Madrid papers as the saviour, the man who's going to rescue Real Madrid. And it's a bit of a worry for Madrid that someone who hasn't played for 55 games and has had 20 minutes last night is the guy that all on his own is going to beat Barcelona.
Mm. Of course, Real Madrid fired up for this one as never before, because am I not right in saying the last time the two teams met, Barcelona made them look extremely, extremely stupid indeed?
Yeah, well, the last time they met, of course, was the 6-2 at the back end of last season. And the last time they'd met before that at the Bernabeu was Barcelona being beaten 4-1 by Real Madrid. So they all talked about revenge for the 6-2. Now it's, sorry, revenge for the 4-1, which became a 6-2. Now they want revenge for the 6-2, which will become, well, we'll see. And it reminds you a bit of the season that Michael Laudrup played at Barcelona, beat Real Madrid 5-0 as a Barcelona player, changed sides the following season, beat Barcelona 5-0 as a Real Madrid player. Cool. Although there's no one who's changed sides this time.
UK Gringo wants to know about David Villa, who's now beginning to show signs that he might sign for an English club, and he wants to know who would be better, Aguero or Villa?
It sort of depends what kind of player you want. I know that's a cop-out of an answer. Villa, incidentally, just to put this into context, I was saying to you a couple of weeks ago that I think he will be changing his mind a little bit because his move to Barcelona or Real Madrid in the summer broke down and he realises that maybe he'll have to go abroad to leave Valencia. He's now sacked the agent that screwed up royally during the summer and didn't get him a club at all. He then admitted the other day, he said, "I'm not opening the doors to any clubs, but nor am I closing the door to any part of the world, Europe or Asia or Africa or wherever it may be." It'd be hilarious if he went and joined an African or an Asian club. So David Villa now is contemplating what he was refusing to contemplate before, which is a move to an English club. I think if you
Notts
want
County?
To like it... Notts County are trying to buy out Cadiz at the moment, Second Division B side. So maybe he'll join Notts County and find himself out on loan in Second Division B Cadiz, who are a great club, by the way, with fantastic fans. The ones whose best chant is "alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. We came here to get drunk and we don't give a shit about the results." They're also the ones that blew kisses at David Beckham when Real Madrid played them. So in the whole game go, "Guapo," which is handsome. And anyway, we've gone off the beaten track a little bit there.
Yes.
Aguero is a fantastic footballer, creative, strong, brilliant with the ball. I think as an all-round player, he is potentially more than David Villa. But with David Villa, you absolutely know, guaranteed, he's going to score you loads and loads of goals. And he's a wonderful footballer. I've said it before, say it again, best striker in the world.
Excellent, Sid. Thank you very, very much indeed, best Madrid-based pod correspondent in the world. There, I've said it. Sid, thank you very much for that. Enjoy the Clásico this weekend.
I shall try, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll speak to you on Monday.
Good stuff.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye, Sid. Bravo, Honigstein.
Yes.
Big week for Bayern Munich. In trouble at the weekend with that draw with the new German leaders Bayer Leverkusen. You might find this quite interesting. They're now point clear in the German First Division. And Van Gaal under all sorts of pressure as he went into their Champions League clash at home to Maccabi Haifa, which could spell the end of their Champions League run and thus potentially the end of said Dutch manager's place on the bench. But instead they came up with a fantastic 1-0 win.
Yeah, I've got nothing more to add to them.
Excellent.
Now, it's still very much touch and go for Van Gaal. He's fallen out with Luca Toni. Luca Toni's been very verbal, very open about the breakdown of the relationship, as he called it, on Italian TV. I think Rai Tre did an interview with him. And Van Gaal last night said, you know, every player has to behave professionally. If he were to apologise, there's a way back for him, but I can't see it at the moment. And
Luca Toni,
it's just sort of a bubbling under the surface. Well, not under the surface. It's a very public dispute.
Well, Luca Toni clearly in the wrong because he skipped the stadium, basically.
Yeah. What Luca Toni's been saying is that the relationship broke down or has been strained for the last four months. And there is this fantastic story that in pre-season training camp, Locatoni was sort of slouching in his chair at the lunch table, and Van Gaal sneaked up on him and pulled his ear to remind him that this is no way to sit as a professional football player. And he also does these things like Van Gaal does, sends individual tables. He gives them a sign so that it can go and pick up the food. Table one, you can go now. Table three. He is very headmasterly. When things don't work for you in terms of results, of course, these things come back to bite you in the backside. But the most of the German players, surprisingly, have been okay with him. It's just
that's curious that it would be the Italian that have a problem. The Germans,
they know,
not.
They know how to goose step to the buffet. No, but the it's been the stars who've really had problems with him. Luca Toni, Ribery. In the meantime, they've done just enough to stay alive for another couple of weeks in the Champions League. They'll now have to win away to Juventus, which would be a huge result. And they've got four games before the winter break to really save their season and save Van Gaal's neck, because they are only seventh in the league. Similar situation to Liverpool. And by Bayern standards, that is, you might as well be fighting relegation. I mean, it's just not remotely acceptable.
Mm. Juve 1 point ahead of them in the group following Juve's 2-0 defeat at Bordeaux that week. A dismal performance by the Bianconeri. And on their current form, in fact, Bayern getting a result in Turin is by no means beyond the realms of possibility. I'm also curious, who is being touted as possible replacement for Van Gaal? Gus Hiddink, potentially?
Well, Hiddink has been mentioned. I mean, he's been in the mix before at Bayern. They sort of made some half-hearted attempt to talk to the Russian Federation, but the signals from Hiddink was there was no way he was going to come last summer. Of course, now the situation has changed. He might be persuaded. The problem is that Bayern are turning into some sort of German version of Real Madrid, firing managers every single year, buying players who on the paper are very expensive and normally should be fairly decent, but the total mix, the strategy is all wrong.
Carumba. Well, there you go. Now, another big story we should touch on, Stuttgart. Big win for them at Rangers. And also the whole Marcus Babbel business.
Yeah, well, Marcus Babbel, the briefing was from Stuttgart that he was going to be sacked if they lost at Ajax. He was very confident. He afterwards said that I knew that my players were good enough to get a result here, and I was very, very sure that we could get a decent result. And perhaps he'd had seen Rangers play before, because they really were unbelievably bad. Really substandard for a Champions League side. One of the worst sides in Champions League I've seen in the flesh in a long, long time. And even Stuttgart, who hadn't won a game in 10 and are 16th in the table with 11 points from 39, couldn't help but play some sort of half-decent football. And it was a match that very much saved Babbel's job. They now can actually get to the last 16 by beating Uzi Ceni, the Romanian side in the last game.
Is that how you
game.
Pronounce it?
I think so.
Okay.
Urinea Uzi Ceni.
No, nice one.
But all the players, including Lehmann and Horst Held, the sporting director, said, "We're playing this team who we can't pronounce, but you know who they are." I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong as well. But hey. it's a big, 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 big win for them.
Excellent. Ooh, Formica Atomica says it's Genoa Sampdoria this weekend. Not on TV though. I'll assume you'll mention this.
What
just
a shame.
In case. I tell you, Genoa Sampdoria is one of the most colourful of the Italian derbies, and Samp doing cracking stuff. We talked about Cassano a short time ago. He'll be involved. Genoa having a bit of a rotten spell, actually. But anyway, he says, I heard Lippi's actually going to the game to watch Antonio Cassano. Ooh, so maybe. Crusty old Marcello Lippi is beginning to reconsider his tough stance.
Could it just be that he's got nothing else to do because Italy are not playing again for the next 4 months?
Yeah.
That he has to watch some games.
Yeah, well, he's always welcome in. He's a former Sampdoria player, Marcello Lippi. So, anyway, it'll be an interesting game, that one. Not on TV. Not sure what is. Inter are taking on Fiorentina. That's a huge game. And Fiorentina, of course, on a high after their qualification. Inter will be plagued by doubts, no doubt. Milan, who are they playing there at home? No, they're away to Catania, who just drawn at Palermo. Milan, I should mention, in the Champions League, squeaked, and I mean squeaked, a draw with Marseille on Wednesday night. Milan need to win at Zurich, the team that beat them 1-0 at the San Siro. Crikey.
And to think some people think the Champions League group stages are not boring anymore.
Amazing, isn't it?
Did you notice that of the 16 games played in this week, 15 of them had 2 goals or fewer?
Barry and I like to bet on there being unders or over 2.5 goals. And
now, do you know what? How about we pause there for a small musical interlude, after which we can turn our thoughts to the Premier League this weekend and some posts.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Part 3. Posts. Welcome back, Barry Glendinning. shall I entertain you with some posts?
Please do.
No, there are lots of them about our MLS special. On reflection, possibly asking a Dutchman who'd only just arrived in the country to be our voice on American sports may have seemed like a little bit of a snub to the, well, as United puts it, the rest of the nation of 300 million. He says, nation of 300 million, yet only a Dutchman who got here 5 months ago will suffice for a Football Weekly call-in.
And excuse me.
Yes.
We had a Yank on before.
We
and
did.
He wasn't brilliant.
He was all right. We also, who was the last person we picked?
Oh, me.
The former bass player with the Commotions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can tell us about the MLS.
I did one.
Right. We're like Martha.
Mine was highly thought of, and yet you forsook me to get a Dutchman.
We're like Marca, pre-El Clasico, on day 12.
This is like when we were going through Serie A correspondence, like the drummers in Spinal Tap.
Indeed so. Now, I've got a whole page of very polite and articulate posts from American listeners, a lot of whom had some kind of issue with what Leander was saying, and as Penfold's 11 puts it, lies, damn lies and statistics that he came up with. He says that his figures on the TV audience were wildly wrong. The TV rating on ESPN was up 30% on the previous year.
Who cares?
Because we asked, has it had an effect, Beckham going there? And Leander's statistics seem to indicate it didn't. And basically all these people posting and saying, yeah, it did. If you look at the things, and also not just on TV, but there was a massive build-up to the game. Seattle turned into the soccer city, etc., etc., etc. Comrade Paisley says the biggest problem that soccer is always going to have in America is that Americans are used to having the best league of a sport to be based in their country. So MLS, which patently isn't the best, and they can see that because they get Champions League, etc., on their tellies, won't be embraced. Letdown counters that a little bit with the example of NASCAR, which, as he points out, is patently not the best of anything, but it's still massively well-followed.
Football needs to do something that will help it appeal to rednecks.
Potentially, although, as other people point out, it's such a big country that you don't have to appeal to rednecks to be successful. I8MSFT, handily monikered, says, in case no one else has pointed this out, MLS's TV contract with Disney ESPN requires them to have this strange MLS Cup single championship game. So that's why they have that bizarre format. Anyway, in the interest of Barry's eyelids remaining in the open position, I am now going to move on to other topics.
Jimbo, did you see Charlie Brooker's column on Monday? He was talking about
Mariah Carey.
About Mariah Carey being a diva, and his view was that it was understandable she was a diva, because once you've worked, Charlie Brooker, who's a Guardian columnist, said that he used to do a really lowly show on cable TV that no one watched.
But this is the same Channel 4, or Charlie Brooker, who's now one of Channel 4's top presenters and completely ubiquitous.
Absolutely the same. But the key point is he had a show on cable that no one watched. But he said even then he had runners doing things for him. He said it became very easy for him to say to the runner, yeah, do this for me, do that for me. And I mean, you've been in that world, Jim, but I mean, you haven't changed.
I've lived the dream.
Did you ever get people chasing gelato for you when you're in Rome and all sorts of things like that?
Did I have a fluffer for my for my two balls? No.
The one thing I found of my very, very limited experience of being on TV is that if you're a guest on a show or something, you turn up, they have all these attractive young women dressed in black holding clipboards who run around. They do you want a tea? Do you want a bun? Do you want cake? Do you want a biscuit? You name it, they'll do it for you. But that's how it is in TV. Soon as they're finished with you on the show, not in the dressing room, that's it. You know, they just treat you as if you don't exist. You know, could someone ring me a cab? No, you'd have to ring your own cab.
You've been hurt, haven't you, Barry?
I have been hurt. I mean, Barry, it's such a false, superficial, nasty world.
How did you get through it, Jim?
Right. Well, yeah, I didn't have any of this running around in my, you know, Channel 4 days because I was out in my Todd in Italy, you see.
But what about
I had
when
to go and do everything
but
by
what
myself.
About when you had that short-running show with Carol Vorderman? Your sort of brief step into sort of the mid-division. Yeah. What happened then?
Right. In TV, you will be, you know, there are people who are kind of there to, you know.
You're the talent.
You're the talent, aren't you? Mm. Yes. Now, what was your point, though?
I was just wondering whether you'd seen it.
His column?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think it was up to his usual standard. Frankly, and if Charlie's listening, I usually enjoy his column enormously. I didn't think that one was as good myself. But there you go.
I doubt he's listening. He hates football.
Does he?
Yeah.
Perfect podcast for him then, really.
Yeah. he used to review computer games.
I'm sorry?
He used to review computer games.
He did.
And when I used to work for Total Sport magazine, I was made redundant about 10 years ago, actually, this month. And I was off the chance I could work on your trout or I could work on various computer game magazines.
You could work on my trout? What are you talking
about?
Well,
eMap, who I for the time had lots of different fishing titles and they had, you know, Country Living and so on. But
right.
And I was offered a choice of four or five not very exciting titles.
Your trout or?
Computer and video games or, yep. You know, your horse.
Yeah.
I turned them down. But I could have perhaps worked with Charlie Bricker and, you know, had big nerdathons with him.
So how did you make the leap from facing a future either in computer and video games or your trout to the kind of online football supremo at Guardian Unlimited?
Well, there was an advert in the Guardian. I applied along with about 400 others and I was very lucky that I got the job.
Not lucky, Sean. Not lucky.
No, there was a lot of luck involved.
Good. That's it for this week's Football Weekly Extra. Apart from the fact that we haven't got on to this weekend's games yet, for goodness sake. Oh, let's see. Somebody here, Mark RG30, says, can we give a quick mention to Reading, who won their first home league game in 301 days last Saturday? So, yeah, well done, Reading. Now, it's a big weekend in the Premier League. Portsmouth are hosting Man United. And, of course, Portsmouth in something of a crisis at the moment. They've just fired Paul Hart. 9 months after hiring him, and he saved them from the drop. They then sold all their players, pulled in some more about a week before the season started, didn't bother paying them for a month or two. And then just when things started to go well, they get rid of the one man who's represented some sort of stability. Is this not willfully stupid behaviour?
I don't know if the stability of 7 points after 13 is the right kind of stability you need. I think you have to... you might just have to change something, anything. Whether Avram Grant is the right manager, I've got my doubts. But I think they needed to do something.
Well, certainly the Chelsea players weren't entirely happy with Avram. And last time I saw him, he was at the Olympic Stadium in Beijing with a young lady friend enjoying a Usain Bolt running down the track. But the next games Portsmouth are playing, they've got United at the weekend, Burnley at home, Sunderland away, Chelsea away, Liverpool at home, West
really
Ham away.
Wise to be saying who he was with.
If Sean saw him on the television, then I imagine...
No, I was
you
there.
Well,
I was next to him.
Oh, you were next to him.
I was sat next to Avram Grant. No, but,
and his companion.
And his companion. I think he was working for Israeli TV. I should qualify that
right.
statement.
Okay.
Portsmouth, you know, they play United the weekend, then they play Burnley at home, Sunderland away, Chelsea away, Liverpool at home, West Ham away and Arsenal at home for the rest of 2010. And you've got to think they're going to do well to get more than 4 points from that.
Hmm.
So they're almost guaranteed to be bottom on, I think, New Year's Day.
Hmm.
And then they're going to lose a whole wedge of players to the African Cup of Nations. You know, you wouldn't want to be Avram Grant.
You wouldn't want to be Avram Grant, who has actually confirmed that he's taking the job. And Man United arriving this weekend. And, they've not been that special on the road, have they, United, so far? But strong favourites for this game, Barry?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think Paul Hart is quite hard done by because Portsmouth have been playing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his fault. Kevin Prince-Boateng took the worst penalty I've ever seen, I think, against Stoke on Sunday. Portsmouth played really well, say, against Everton. That was a game they lost at home and they should have won, and they were very unlucky not to win. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure a couple of big decisions went against them. But you know, if it is a stupid decision by Portsmouth board, it won't be the first stupid decision they've made in recent times, and it probably won't be the last either.
Mm. Well summed up. Aston Villa, in the meantime, taking on Spurs. Will it be, there goes gravity, back to reality for Spurs after that phenomenal performance against Wigan?
I don't think they'll be able to find a team who's so less interested in defending than Wigan were, as Wigan were ever in this league. And if anything, Villa are very good at destroying not only the opposition game, but sometimes their own game as well. So I think it's going to be very, very tough match, probably only one or two goals in it. And you must, I would make Villa favourites at home.
Yeah. Wigan, meantime, the team on the wrong end of that 9-1, will be patching their morale back together and hosting Sunderland. Steve Bruce us with the opportunity to face all those dodgy players he signed to while at Wigan. And, of course, Darren Bent, man on fire.
Well, he's not really. He scored against Arsenal at the weekend, but before that I think he'd gone one international or half an international and two league games without scoring. But
he scored against Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United in the league this season.
Good for him. No, he's doing very well. This Wigan are obviously going to be eager to make amends for what happened last Sunday, so they may only lose, I don't know, 4 or 5 nil. This is exactly the kind of game Sunderland have been losing this season, so I'll go for a draw.
All right. Slasher says, is Wigan refunding fans for, you know, the first such case in the UK? Anybody know of any other such cases apart from the Energia Cottbus one? Remind us, Rafa, what was the Energia Cottbus one?
I think it was a 2-0 defeat, but they played really, really badly, and they their fans had travelled hundreds of miles, and they refunded them. It was only, I think, 500 of them.
Mm.
I'm trying to think if there was a similar case in the
Premier
League.
There was Jordan Palace, I'm sure.
What about Martin O'Neill offering to take everyone to dinner?
That
after
was
that
a Moscow
thing,
yeah.
When Aston Villa fielded a team of reserves, etc.
Well, I mean, it was a nice gesture by Wigan's players to offer to refund, but there's only going to cost them about a tenner each, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
Now, another interesting game. I mean, there's Blackburn, who lost in a fairly heavy fashion to Fulham midweek. That's 3-0 win for the Cottagers, moving them into the top half. And of course, best wishes to Big Sam, who missed that game because he's having. Oh, and it's this weekend he's missing because he had having heart surgery. Blackburn anyway are hosting Stoke. West Ham are hosting Burnley. Wolves are hosting Birmingham. Man City are hosting Hull. Back to the scene of the crime for Phil Brown, because of course it was at Eastlands at half time in that infamous 5-1 defeat against City, that he had the brilliant idea of sitting his team down on the pitch and having his team talk in front of the fans. Mm.
We should actually say well done to Phil Brown, because they've 7 points from nine, and they've we were all writing them off. And
yeah, we have been very quick to dance on his grave, so he deserves credit. So yeah, hats off.
Will the revival continue this weekend at Man City, who have drawn their last six games in the league?
It could well do. Yeah.
No way.
City are pretty hopeless.
No way. No. City can't play any worse, I think, in terms of not utilising the potential that they have on the pitch. Undoubtedly, Rubinho might be back as well. So there's absolutely no way that Hull can get a result there.
That would just make me slightly more confident they can get a result.
Really? Care to put your money where your mouth is, Mr. Glennon?
No.
Hull are 12-1.
If 12-1? You've got to fancy that, Barry. Come on.
I'd have a bit of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think they'll necessarily win, but Man City have given no indication whatsoever in recent months that they're any good. And Hull have.
Yeah. Okay. Since joining the club in August 2008, Hull defender Kamil Zayate has scored 4 goals for the Tigers and 4 against them. How about that for a stat? There you go. And with that, we've officially reached the bottom of the barrel in this week.
We reached that about halfway through part one.
We should say happy Thanksgiving to all our American listeners.
We should. What? Go on then.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, American listeners.
I refuse to say that.
Why, Barry?
Because all our American listeners, all they do is complain. Now they're going to stuff themselves with turkey, gorge themselves with beer and watch American football while I have to work.
But you're right.
To hell with them all.
Not technically, Barry, because by the time they're doing that, it'll actually be about 7 or 8 o'clock UK time and you'll be at home.
Right. Stuffing yourself with turkey.
No, I won't.
All right.
I don't even like turkey that much.
No, well, there you go. Or pumpkin.
No, I like pumpkin.
Really? Okay. Now, that's it then for this week's pod. Many, many thanks for joining us today, Raphael Honigstein.
Thank you.
And you, Sean Ingle.
Thank you.
And you, Barry Glendinning.
You're welcome.
And you, producer Pete. We will be back on Monday. And hopefully you'll join us for that. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.